accession number 19930, reel 2.
Harry Lapidus, reel 2. What condition were you in by the time you got back to England?
Just very tired. But we were fit men. And a good sleep put us on our feet again.
So were you an intact unit when you got back?
Oh no, the unit was all in bits and pieces. It took days and days to find out where all the rest of them were. We were badly split up, and in fact the other battery, 362 battery, I was in 361 battery, one of their troops had tried to shortcut the main road to get to Dunkirk quicker, but were badly shot up by a German armoured patrol and suffered a number of casualties. So we did the right thing by sticking to the main routes.
What was morale like at Lark Hill?
Very bad. We thought it was the end of the world. Remember, we were territorials and regulars and had never expected this. But after talking to each other, we realised that we'd all escaped, and we were all determined that we would go back and beat the Germans. That was what was back of our mind. Leave was organised, and after 10 days leave, the regiment then went to the Isle of Man, where we had 2 weeks there, and then we came down to Brighton and were scattered along the south coast, where we saw the whole of the Battle of Britain.
Can you tell me what you saw of that, please?
Beg pardon?
Can you tell me what you saw of the Battle of Britain, please?
Yes. We saw the dogfights. We went to pick up pilots, sometimes British pilots, sometimes German pilots. And in one particular case, the German pilot offered us all Craven A cigarettes, which we hadn't seen for years. And I asked him where he got them from, and he said, "You left them behind in Dunkirk." Anyway, he was taken POW. I was then posted to Shoreham Airport and given command of 2 Hispano-Suiza anti-aircraft guns, which fired, I think, a 0.5 bullet, or perhaps a bit more, probably 0.75 bullet, and they're very difficult to use, but when we got used to them, we were able to use them. We were bombed pretty well, the airport was bombed pretty well every morning, and during the heavy time of the Battle of Britain, fighter pilots used to use it as a base to land in if their own fields had been badly shot up. This brought the odd German, because fighter pilots had used the airport, obviously couldn't get back to their own. We used to get the odd German plane over, intending to machine gun the planes that had landed on the ground. And one particular morning, we had a Messerschmitt 110 over. He ran over the airfield once and machine gunned one of the planes that was landed. one of the fighter planes had landed. And as he came over again, I managed to get the Espona Suiza, which was difficult to handle in a way, up the backside of his plane and let him have a burst of probably 12 to 14 shells. And they went up the tail and obviously did some damage because it immediately started to smoke. And it actually came down at Lancing College. So it was one down for the gunners. The RAF tried to claim it, but they weren't able to. It was ours. So that was one good thing that came out of it. Well, I then moved along the coast to just outside Ford Aerodrome, which was being handed over from the Fleet Air Arm then to RAF. We had small gun positions there. We weren't anti-aircraft, but we had small machine gun positions there to defend the airport. But unfortunately, it was very badly attacked. I think it was August the 25th, 1940, where we received a large number of casualties. We'd had the all clear from Littlehampton, and everyone, as was common in those days, had gone back to bed on a Sunday afternoon, or gone back to rest. And I'm afraid we were machine gunned and bombed in our billets. I then moved back down.
What effect did that attack have on the men?
Well, we were pretty depressed by this time because we were waiting for new equipment. And we hadn't been re-equipped with new guns and new vehicles, and we were really doing an infantry job, which we didn't like. But mostly after that raid, we were all cleared away from Ford. I went down to a place called Climping, which is down on the beach. And I spent the rest of the Battle of Britain there. And I was there after the great day when I think we knocked out 144 German aeroplanes. And then I was commissioned.
What were conditions like for you at Climping?
We were right down on the beach. All we ever did there was to stand to and wait for the Germans to invade, which of course they never did.
Had you expected a German invasion?
Not really. After Dunkirk, we never really expected that the Germans would ever come to actually try to invade. What they used to do was to send their airboats at night time, a couple of hundred yards off the beach, and machine gun all along the beach. But that was the most they ever did. So we were very happy when we all moved back to Aldershot, waiting for new equipment, and I went away to be commissioned.
Were you keen to be an officer?
By then, yes. It was a different regiment. We were waiting for different guns, and I was selected to go away for commissioning, and I went away with two friends and we were happy.
Just before we leave 1940, did you listen to Churchill's speeches at that time?
Oh yes, all the time. We listened to everything he had to say.
What effect on you did they have?
Oh, great moral boosting. Is the greatest thing that's ever happened.
And Lord Haw Haw?
Oh, highly amused. at Lord Ho Ho. We'd got ourselves, we'd got our friends, we were recovering our morale, we were going to, and we knew we could do the job.
Did you ever think that the Germans might win the war?
No. No. Not after Dunkirk. Not after they didn't invade. And we always, there were desperate times when we were by ourselves, but I always thought that the Americans would come.
Anything to tell me about the officer selection procedure, please?
It was tough. It was, if I remember, 5 months. Very, very tough indeed. Up early in, very early in the morning, late at night. Probably the day I left officers' training unit, I was fitter than I've ever been in my life.
What did they seem to be looking for in an officer?
Obviously competence in every piece of equipment. I could work every single piece of a gun by the time I left. And I think people who had morale and who felt that we were going to win the war. I certainly did. I had no doubts about it, to be honest.
What happened to you next?
I was then posted to an assault field regiment, 178 assault field regiment, and we were going to reinvade Norway, and we were equipped with the I'm trying to think of the emblems we had.
Your shoulder flashes.
Shoulder flashes. But within 6 weeks, we were on our way to the Far East with long johns and all winter equipment. And we were re-equipped in South Africa. And then I went on to India and joined the 19th Brigade of 36th British Division. And
what was the voyage to South Africa and India like?
Okay, fine. No problems. We were used to being crammed up then, of course. And in those days, alcohol was available on the ships. And we were allowed to wear boots. Later on troopers, 18 division, I know from East Anglia, weren't allowed to wear boots on board the troopers because of damaging the decks. And they landed in Singapore with soft feet. And in one brigade, couldn't even march the 20-odd miles to the Johor Causeway. But that didn't happen when I went out. I went out before that was brought in. And I don't think that that restriction applied for long.
Do you know when approximately you arrived in India?
It wasn't very long after Pearl Harbor.
Well, that was December 1941.
Probably February 42 then. January, February 42.
February 42 was the fall of Singapore time.
That was it. That was it. When Tom Phillips went down on the... That's right. That's it. And the Repulse went too. Prince of Wales and Repulse. I remember.
What were your first impressions of India?
God. seeing a dead man carried by four people with his arms hanging down, and they said they were taking him to be buried. And red splashes from betel nut and lime leaves, which brought the red and brought the spittle, and everybody was splashing it all over the place. And people, of course, sleeping on the streets.
This was Bombay?
Bombay. And then we moved up, and we were training then with the Chindits in Karagvazla, which is very near to Pune.
What kind of training were you doing at that time?
General training, gun training, picking gun positions. And then we had a change of equipment. We were normally 325 pounder batteries, and they changed us to 125 pounder battery, 137 pack howitzer battery, and one priest gun battery, which was Sherman's with a 5.5 gun or a 4.5 gun. I can't remember. And I was in the Sherman battery, and I was sent on a course to be shown how to drive tanks.
What were the main problems in driving those?
Well, it was entirely different. You needed two hands to change gear, really, and you had to keep the revs up to 3,600, otherwise it failed. But it took 6 weeks. I and a sergeant, and we came back and taught the battery. We had about another 6 weeks to teach them how to drive. But then, of course, there was the gun on the top, which was rather different to having a stationary gun. But we went into the Arakan with those, and they were a failure. We went into action a few times, but we were never quite able to do what we wanted to do with them. So, between the 42? Was that the 43 Arakan? Anyway, between that one and the next Arakan we were in, or campaign in the Arakan, we were changed back to 25 pounders. And the regiment then consisted of two regiments of 25 pounders and one regiment of 37 pack howes. And we were waiting for, as we were trained for assault, we'd done a very big course on the west coast of India, going ashore with our guns and vehicles, because we were supposed to be an assault regiment.
Whereabouts on the west coast was that done?
Between Bombay and Ratnagiri, landing up and down the coast. But I rather jumped it then. But then we were back to 25 pounders, and we went into the Arakan.
Before I ask you to say more about the Arakan, in India, did you come across any civil disobedience or civil disturbances?
Not really. Not in Pune we didn't. Not in Bombay we didn't. And I had a leave there, and I didn't see any of that. I also took the guns across India, which was 4 days, and had a fire. The camouflage netting caught on fire. I thought they were going to court-martial me for that, but they thought I'd done pretty well by getting the fire out, because we lost two guns on the flats. But then we got to Bombay and started to make our way up to the Lido Road, and the different gauges of rail in Assam. So we kept having to unload and reload, and then I was posted to the temporarily posted to the 37 Pack Howe Regiment, and I was it was all dropped when we were flown into India. The Lido Road was closed, and the pack guns were dropped in pieces, and we assembled them, and we got all of them. And then when the Lido Road opened, we were in action against the Japs there, of course. That was north of the Irrawaddy. And I also saw Vinegar Joe, who was, and Merrill's Marauders, who were up there.
You saw Stillwell himself?
Yes.
Under what circumstances did you come across
him? He came to see us. Vinegar Joe. I quite liked him. He spoke to us all. And then I think he was relieved of his command. He'd been if I remember rightly, he'd been a 4-star American general and had gone into China and had become a missionary and then formed some Chinese divisions who came into Mamio at the top and met us and Merrill's Marauders. And that's where we met him. My general was General Festing, 6'6" with a big stick. The infantry hated him anywhere near because the Japs could see him. And he always called the Japs bad shots because they couldn't hit him.
Why did Stillwell make such a good impression on you?
I knew he'd been a minister. He'd been a soldier, and he'd come back to be a soldier again, and he'd raised these Chinese divisions. I had a great admiration for him. Then I think a man called Sultan became the general after. But by which time we were on our way down the single-track railway and the single track. There was a single from Mamia, from Mandalay to Michinar, there was a single track railway and a road that ran alongside it, never went more than 150 yards away from it, all the way up. And the Chindits had dropped there. During the monsoon, when the track would be impassable, and they dropped to blow up the railway line. And we came across all their dropping zones. And in fact, I was in a truck that was hit by one of theirs that the Japanese had never blown up. And I was in the truck and tipped over on it and dislocated my shoulder. But
where was this?
That would be near Indore, just north of the Irrawaddy.
You mean it was blown up on a mine?
Blown up by one of the Chindit mines, because we thought the Japs had immobilized them. The driver was hurt, but I was on the other side and I was okay, except for my shoulder. Then, trying to think, on Christmas Eve of 1944. I'd flown over the Irrawaddy. I'd been done some observing with an American pilot for our guns, so I'd seen it before. But when our brigade, and some of the infantry had patrolled it, obviously, but when our brigade hit the Irrawaddy, there it was, that flat expanse of river with, I've forgotten what they call them, the elbow, there's a geographical name for
Oxbow
it.
Oxbow Lake?
Oxbow Lake. Formed there, there must have been 50 yards of silt and mud that had come from the mountains up above, and we were told to cross the river. I was asked to get four guns over, and I think with the Royal Sussex, who no longer exist, unfortunately, and I think I got six over on that day.
How was it done?
The engineers knocked up some pontoons. And the whole of the battalion of the Sussex got over, and I think six guns of my battery, and 40 rounds per gun. Fortunately, the Japs were some 30 miles away. The following day, which was Christmas Day, we spent quietly. The Americans dropped some roast turkey in and some vegetables. They probably thought we deserved it. And the local village put on a thing called the Pui, P-W-E, which was like a Burmese dance. And the rest of the troops started coming over. And when the brigade was assembled, like in 2 days, we then pushed on. The Japs were then in retreat because the British Indian divisions and 2DIV, which was a British division, were coming over the Chindwin, and the Japs were going to be cut off. They'd been up in North Burma, of course, to invade India and to meet up with the Germans in the Middle East. But not now. They're on the way. But they stopped and had a very big fight with us on a river called the Shweli. But we were down to not many people. Been besides wounds, there was illnesses and malaria. And in fact, the doctor whom I slept with had told me that he thought that 95% of the regiment had diarrhea or some sort of runny complaint like that. And but we went on, and they sent us a new brigade. They sent us an Indian brigade that had the first Buffs, first Gurkhas, some Hyderabads, and they took most of the fighting on the Shweli. And the Buffs had terrible casualties there and had to leave a lot of wounded men with their doctors on the one side. But we got round, and we got down to Memeo. And then they decided we'd had enough. I said we were down to about four men per detachment instead of six. And when you remember that 25-pounder shells had to be carried 30 yards from behind, bring them up to the guns, and you'd probably fire 100 shells at a go, those ammunition haulers were pretty tired. So they took us out at Mandalay.
Mandalay?
At Memeo, which is quite near Mandalay. And across the other side of the lake at Memeo, believe it or not, were Japanese and their geisha girls.